Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Alan, thank you for joining us on 1010 Wins. Can you tell us how it came to be that you were in the emergency room on the night that John Lennon was shot?
Well, I had a motorcycle, and I was driving in Central Park, and I was hit by a taxi cab. And so I was rushed by ambulance into the emergency room at Rosewood Hospital around a little bit after 10 o'clock at night on that Monday, 40 years ago.
And you get in there and you're being worked on. And then when does it become apparent that something other than your own injury, something big is happening in the emergency room?
So I'm lying on a gurney in the hallway in the emergency room, and the lady doctor who was the head of the medical staff in the emergency room was literally examining me, you know, checking to see what the damage was and making arrangements to get me into, some sort of an x-ray situation. And all of a sudden, behind us, the door slams open and a man comes running in shouting, "We've got a gunshot to the chest." And the doctor said, "When's it coming in?" And he said, "Hitting the door right now." And I'm able to crane around and look behind me because that was where the entrance to the emergency room was. And I could see some people running in, looked like police officers, carrying somebody between them. And they literally brought that person right into the room that I was lying outside of. And the doctor said to me, "Alan, you know, obviously I've got to take care of this. I'm sorry. I'll get back to you as soon as I can." So I'm lying on the gurney, and because of the accident, I really hit my head pretty hard. My ears were ringing. My head was a little fuzzy. My eyes were closed, and two officers come out of the room, and they're literally standing right next to my gurney, and one says to the other, "Can you believe it? John Lennon." So I opened my eyes, and I looked up, and I said, "Excuse me, officer, what did you say?" And he looks at me, and, you know, he sees a guy that, you know, looks like the cat dragged it in because I had dirt all over me from being on the ground in Central Park. And he said, I didn't say anything. He walked away. So I literally couldn't believe my ears. I knew I'd banged my head, so I wasn't sure how much I was functioning properly. And I wasn't positive I heard John Lennon. It could have been Jack Lemmon. It could have been some name that I don't know at all. So it took a while before I found out it was John Lennon.
And at what point does your newsman sensibility kick in and you get to call your station Channel 7?
Well, I was lying there, and you have to understand that 40 years ago, we couldn't just whip out a cell phone and make a call. I knew there was a payphone at the other end of the emergency room, in the waiting area outside the emergency room. But I still wasn't sure it was John Lennon. But on the other hand, I was too well trained, and I hope my professors at the Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism can, you know, hear this, but I was too well trained to ignore the possibility, as incredible as it is, that it really could be John Lennon. So while I tried to ask the medical staff that were rushing into the room to talk to me for a moment, they clearly were too professional to do that. There was a custodian who was sweeping the floor nearby me. And I called him over and I said, "Hey, do you ever watch Eyewitness News?" He goes, "Yeah, Geraldo Rivera, Bill Gutel, Roger Grinsby." I said, "Yeah, well, I'm a producer at Eyewitness News. Here's my business card. Would you call, and whoever answers the phone, just simply say, Alan's in the hospital at Roosevelt, St. Luke's, and I think John Lennon may have been shot. And I gave him the card, and I gave him $20. And I laid down, and I think, you know, as a newsman, I had discharged my duties. Well, about 3 minutes later, a security guard comes over, gives me back the business card, not the 20, and says, Mr. Weiss, you can't make phone calls with the staff here, personal phone calls with the staff. And I said, well, sir, it's not exactly a personal phone call. It's a business call. Mr. Weiss, we have a situation. Can you just be quiet and just let us do our jobs here? So I really felt a little bit like a jerk. So I was going to follow his orders, and I was going to lie there and be quiet, except that I began to hear crying. And again, I was able to look behind me, and in came an Asian woman in a mink coat on a arm of a very tall, leather-jacketed police officer. And I said, I'm pretty sure that's Yoko Ono. I wasn't positive, but I was pretty sure it was Yoko Ono. So I knew I had to make a phone call. So I was able to. I was fortunate, first of all, that adrenaline kicked in. And secondly, there were gurneys lined up along the hallway. So I was able to hop my way down on my good leg, literally to the doorway where on the other side, 3 feet away, was the payphone. Security guard stopped me, wouldn't let me leave. And he literally is pulling me away when one of the police officers that had originally brought me in came up to me going, what are you doing standing up? You know, you could put you in an ambulance. And I said, well, hadn't you heard? And he said, didn't I hear what? I said that he's been shot. And he said, who's been shot? And I said, John Lennon. And he said, well, who told you that? And I said, well, no one told me, but I think I heard two officers speaking about it. And he pointed to his mic that he had, you know, on his shoulder. He said, Alan, if John Lennon had been shot, it would be on the radio and we'd all know about it. I said, so he hasn't been shot? He says, no, Alan, come back to your bed. So he unhinged the vice grip the security guard had on me, and he's helped me back to my gurney. And Bud, I don't know what it was, because if there were a hole in the ground, I would have fallen into it. I would have caught. I mean, I just really felt like I was making a nuisance of myself. But for some strange reason, I just said, as we walked by the nursing station, can I just make a phone call? And so he knew the code that you needed to use the in-house phone. So he reached over, he punched in the code. I punched in the number to Eyewitness News. I got the 11 o'clock assignment editor. Now, this is probably a little bit after 11 o'clock. And normally, Eyewitness News would be on, except it was Monday night football, and they were also in overtime. So I got the assignment editor, and I said, look, I know I banged my head, but I think that I heard the name John Lennon. I'm pretty sure I saw Yoko Ono. And he says to me, well, I just heard a few minutes ago a call for an ambulance to 72nd Street in Central Park West. And we all know it's where the Dakota is, so I was rolling a crew over there just to check it out. And look, that's it. That's the third part of the puzzle. I heard his name. I've seen Yoko. And now you're telling me an ambulance to 72nd Central Park West. It's John Lennon. The man's been shot, and he's here at Roosevelt St. Luke's.
So when you exited the hospital that night, what was the scene like?
Bedlam. It really was bedlam. It was after midnight, and they were about to have a press conference from the hospital to officially announce Lennon's death. And it was an enclosed area. Back then, the exit to the emergency room was on 9th Avenue, and it was within a gated area, and everyone was just kind of packed into that area. And I found my crew, and I did an interview with them, and then I did other interviews. And then I went in the next day, and I actually produced the 6 o'clock news, which was 90% on the story of John Lennon, which was the first time, to my knowledge, that we had ever done a single story to that extent.
Alan, you've had a long career, a long and very successful career, going different places, doing different stories. Is there a way you can put into words what actually being part of the Lennon story has meant to you through the years?
it's made me a better journalist. It was, you know, I was young. I was in my late 20s. It's too easy as a journalist to be on the outside looking in. And so much of what we cover in news, particularly local news, is other people's pain and tragedy. And I was young and I, you know, more callous than I've become since. And for two reasons, this changed me. I was a Beatles fan. I love the Beatles. I love John Lennon. I mean, this was a cultural icon, somebody that I grew up with, someone who was, gravity to a world. You know, the late 60s, the early 70s were really crazy times in this country between the assassinations and the police riots and all the other things that were happening. And the Beatles were a centering force. And John Lennon used his fame. So few celebrities do that. Use his fame for good. You know, anti-war posters. He bought bulletproof vests for police officers in New York before they were standard equipment. So on the one hand, personally, it affected me. And as a journalist, because I was so close to this incredibly senseless murder, it just showed me the humanity that I think that I might not have been as aware of in my younger days. And I've kind of taken that as a mantra to follow in my subsequent career.
Is it a topic that comes up? You're in a social situation at a party, and is it if it comes up, is it something that stops all other conversation and people feel the need to ask you about it?
You know, but it's kind of incredible. I mean, yeah, everybody has those moments. You remember where you were if you're old enough when John F. Kennedy was killed or Martin Luther King. You remember when the Challenger blew up or the World Trade Centers and the Pentagon were attacked. John Lennon is like that, not just for me, but for just about everyone I've come across, regardless of age. There was just something special about John Lennon that has endured. It is such an incredible testament to this man that 40 years later, people are still talking about it. And I think it's because it was such a senseless, selfish act. He was shot for one reason and one reason only. He was only shot to make somebody else famous. Matter of fact, that person came to New York from Hawaii with a list of people that he was thinking about killing, one of which was Johnny Carson. But he decided on John Lennon because he figured he'd get, you know, greater infamy for it. And I think that those things, you know, the quality of Lennon as a person, the quality of Lennon as a musician, the incredible popularity and cultural imprint of the Beatles, and the incredible insanity and senselessness of the shooting, I think is something that is going to take a very, very long time for people to forget and for it to you know, scab over, I guess.
Alan, thank you for being on 1010 Wins.
Nice speaking with you, bud. Take care of yourself.